Welcome back to the Baseball America College Baseball Podcast. It's always good to be talking college ball once every 2 weeks in the offseason. I'm Jacob Rudner, joined as always by my co-host Peter Flaherty. And Peter, so much to discuss on this latest episode of the College Pod between fall ball, which is now underway everywhere. There's not a team that I know about at this point, besides Coastal Carolina, that has not had a practice. And we'll get into why they haven't practiced yet later on in the show. But Jupiter, we got to see the World Championships with a lot of very talented high school prospects. Before we get into any of that, though, how are you? What's the latest?
I'm doing great. Speaking of latest, I think I had the latest arrival time back from Jupiter of at least a number of people that were there. Obviously, I'm based in Boston, and we had some weather up this way yesterday. So in turn, and Jacob can attest to this because he saw it in real time, I was scrambling trying to get on a flight because my initial flight was delayed. But anyways, long story short, initial flight canceled. New flight I get on, it was going to be an 8 o'clock Delta flight that landed at around 11. So a reasonable, palatable hour. That flight got delayed by 3.5 hours, so it turned into a kind of a quasi red eye where I left Palm Beach at 11:30, and I got back at 3 a.m. And then it's like an infomercial, but wait, there's more. There were no Ubers to be found at Logan International Airport. No Ubers, and I have a good Uber rating, not to brag. So I knew it wasn't a me issue. So I had to download Lyft, and I got home at 3:52 in the morning. So I'm a little tired, but it was such a fun, invigorating week, as I'm sure you felt the same. It was like a great, I almost view like the ABCA as like a battery recharge ahead of the college season, but like this got the juices flowing. It's hard not to, and we'll get into some of the guys in this episode, but it was a very fun, fast-paced 5 days that I think you know, it was very productive for all involved.
For those of you who are unfamiliar, the Jupiter Wood Bat World Championships is kind of a beast that stands alone. I'm not sure that there are many events quite like this. Over the course of 4 days, so from Thursday until Monday, there were probably, what, Peter, 220 baseball games, a varied length, 5 to 7 innings. There was rain. It's at the Marlins spring training complex, the Marlins and the Cardinals spring training complex. And it is just game after game after game of prepsters with very bright futures showing off their stuff in front of scouts and media members. And it is probably the biggest wood bat showcase in the land. And it is a great opportunity to get a look at some of the stars of the future. That, of course, applies to some players who will never see a college at bat or throw a pitch at the Division I or any divisional level. And then there are guys who are probably going to go on and be very productive college baseball players, if not college stars. We saw plenty from both buckets. We had the opportunity to evaluate, I mean, hundreds of baseball players, and we'll have content about some of those evaluations and kind of what we saw from Jupiter over at baseballamerica.com over the next couple of days. I'm writing a piece about some toolsy guys. Peter's going to cover 20 standouts, 10 pitchers, and 10 hitters. But we wanted to take a little bit of time on the podcast to focus on some of the bigger standouts, some of the guys who are going to end up in that Peter piece and one who will end up in the Jacob side of the write-ups from Jupiter. But this was a really exciting weekend for me, and I'm sure for you as well. That starts with 2028 righty striker Pence, a 6'6", 16-year-old. He was up to 101 four times. Unheard of velocity for an underclassman his age, and watching him pitch was truly kind of an out-of-body experience. And so we got to watch his full outing. We were basically right behind the plate for it. There's video up on the Baseball America YouTube channel, which I would encourage you to go check out. There's also a feature story on Striker Pence, kind of getting to know the player, that just went up today, Tuesday, October 14th, over at baseballamerica.com, so go check that out. But for the sake of our conversation, first let me ask you this. Where does this fall in the bucket of I've never seen anything like this before? Was it a mind-blowing thing for you? Was this something that is kind of irreplaceable? I know we've seen velocity at the high school level. He's not the first prep guy to throw 100-plus. However, he's got to be one of, if not the youngest players to do it.
Yeah, I mean, for his age, a 16-year-old sophomore, 2028, like if you just isolate the age, this was... it was pretty unique for a lot of reasons. I remember in 2020, the COVID area code deal, with the Yankees, I saw Chase Petty up to 100. Obviously Stryker's a little bit different looking body wise than Chase. He's, you know, the 6'6", 200 pound, extra long kid with, you know, some present physicality. Like, he's only going to get, you know, stronger and even more physical. Like, you can already see him starting to fill out. But this was wildly impressive. I mean, he's not eligible until 2028, but I think the mindset of everyone in Jupiter was, you know, you got to see it just to see it. So it was pretty hot scouting wise. But like you said, he sat 96 to 99 for the two innings that he threw and was up to 101. And like, it's not a one trick pony with just like velo, and it's like kind of this dead zone profile. And like, you dig in a little bit and this, that, and the other thing, but like, it's a high spin pitch. I think he was spinning it in like the 2,500 or so range, if not higher, with carry through the zone. So it's like, it's a lively, you know, 98 to 101 or 96, 99 up to 101. Like, I think I wrote it in my report, but you know, it's not super unreasonable if you were to stick a 70 on it. And like, in the spirit of, you know, one trick ponies, like, he's got a pair of viable secondaries, and both of which look like legit swing and miss put away pitches. You know, as he continues to progress, like the first being the mid to upper 80s power slider. It's got a ton of sharp and lateral life with a bit of depth to it. It's a super tough look for righties, especially just, you know, coming, you know, with that sort of lateral length to it. And then you've got the late bite, and you know, it'll just sweep all the way across the plate. You know, it is undoubtedly a pitch that consistently flashes plus, but it's not super unreasonable to project a future double plus on it. Perhaps even a 65 if you want to meet in the middle. And then like, he's got this high 80s split change that was really effective, does a nice job of killing spin on the pitch. He threw, I think, two in our look at him, but he turned over one really good one that flashed late life. Like, very much looks the part of a more than viable third pitch. Like, there's obviously low-hanging fruit to clean up in the delivery and the operation, like stretch only, kind of a spray gun command-wise, inconsistent landing spot. But, like, it's premium stuff across the board. And I mean, he's a 16-year-old kid right now. So, you know, this stuff, this like primo stuff is pretty remarkable for where he's at. Like, obviously one of the biggest keys going forward is going to be competing in and around the zone on a consistent basis and letting the stuff play, because the only thing that stuff buys you is time if you can't throw strikes. But I don't think that's a, you know, real issue or concern right now. He's an unbelievable arm talent, and it's pretty ridiculous to think about what he might look like in a couple of years, because I was constantly reminding myself, you know, when kind of digging in on him and writing him up, and, you know, as I would discuss him, like, he's still 16, he's a sophomore in high school, like, his draft year is still, you know, 2.5+ years away. So it was very impressive, and it was double plus fuel by him, because we, as he got through his second inning of work, which was going to be his final inning anyways, like, the heavens opened up. So we got a full outing of him, which was great.
And one thing that you mentioned there was really what stood out to me, which is that it was very apparent throughout his outing just how raw this prospect is. We're talking about somebody who has the physical natural talent to be able to throw 100 miles per hour, but there isn't a whole lot mechanically that's going into that right now. It's a very raw delivery. I don't know that he repeated very well, but, and as you said, he is 16. Time is on his side. 2028 prospect, whether or not he reclasses is a conversation for later. Maybe he becomes a 2027 prospect, but even so, there is so much time between now and when he's actually going to be a focal point of the draft conversation that there is room for what could end up being historic improvement. We did a story at Baseball America in April about the guys who have recorded official 100 plus mile per hour fastballs at the prep level or at prep age. That includes a few guys from Japan, and some international prospects. But Stryker Pence already is one of 10 guys to have touched 101 or higher at a verified event with, you know, TrackMan or some level of ability to have a fastball that's not just, you know, a radar, individual radar gun 100 miles per hour. This is legit. Could he be somebody who touches 103? If he is, and I think he could be eventually, he would be the first prep player to touch 103 miles per hour that we have seen in a recorded fashion. So this is somebody who very much is on a historic pace. Like I said, it is so raw and still so young that there's kind of an endless amount of projectability here. He's 6'6". There's room to grow into his frame still. I'd argue that he's still growing overall. And so that was kind of, to me, the most mind-blowing occurrence in Jupiter from this past week. There were some guys that are a lot closer, though, to the college level that you and I were very impressed by. Whether or not they end up in college is TBD. The first one I want to talk about with you is RJ Cope, a Vanderbilt commit. He's 6'8", left-handed hitting first baseman. He's also a left-handed pitcher. Up to 91, he's got a decent feel for a changeup. Threw three innings and struck out five, gave up a run in Jupiter. It was a good outing. Where he was truly outstanding, however, was at the plate. 10 for 16 with a double and a home run. Not the best runner in the world. He still pulled off three stolen bases during his time in Jupiter. I came away feeling as though RJ Cope was one of, if not the more impressive hitters throughout the course of the weekend. The power potential is off the charts. I think similar to the Stryker Pence line of conversation, a little bit underdeveloped in terms of the mechanics of hitting and getting into a swing that he's going to be able to repeat and utilize consistently. Once he does that, I think the sky is the limit, and he is somebody who would grade out, at least in the raw sense, toward the top of the scale from a power perspective. What did you think in your look?
This is for everyone listening right now. What are you wearing right now? And why isn't it MeUndies? Kratz, it is time for everyone to upgrade and get that super soft micromodal glory. So good that you don't want to take it off.
The reason I'm stone-facing you is because that's how soft they are. It's ridiculous. Like, I don't even understand what kind of material it is. It's got to be something space age for your butt.
Signature super soft micro modal fabric. Breathable, stretchy, unbelievably cozy. And now you can even get glow in the dark part of the Halloween line. Right now, as a listener of FT, you can get cozy and spooky for less with deals up to 50% off at MeUndies.com/Val. Enter promo code FOUL. That's MeUndies.com/Val. Promo code FOUL for up to 50% off MeUndies. Comfort that's made for fall.
I mean, he lit it up for us in terms of just sheer performance. It's hard to top what he did this week, as you noted. Like, you know, and he's still, like, he's very new to, I guess, relatively speaking, new to hitting. Like, he had been primarily focused on pitching for almost the entirety of his career, and he's just now kind of, you know, starting to swing it literally. So I think the upside here is massive. As you said, like, he's 6'7", 6'8", 240 something pounds. Like, I think the one knock on him is like how he moves. Like, he doesn't move great, but also at that size, it's like, who is moving that well? So, I mean, it's a knock, but not really. But it's like, you know, there's some things to iron out there in the swing and, you know, getting more into his lower half, but like the raw strength and ability to impact the baseball with ease is really, really impressive. And from the left side as well, like, there's tons of power there right now. There's probably even more power on the way, you know, as he continues to learn how to hit and, you know, iron out the swing and polish that up a little bit. But man, the impact with Cope is really special. Like, it's potentially double plus power when all is said and done.
He's not 6'8", but another guy who I think has the potential to grow into some more power is Blake Bowen. He's an Oregon State commit. This was not my first look at Mr. Bowen throughout the summer. I saw him at a showcase in Los Angeles as well. He has had a summer of just purely crushing baseballs, and he has impressed a whole lot of onlookers. You and I were impressed. What were some of your notes on Bowen? I personally thought, Pete, that the swing was really good. The physicality is unreal. He looks like a free safety or a middle linebacker out there. He's got fast hands. He's a good athlete. Whether or not he sticks in center field, probably up for debate a little bit. Regardless, though, I think we saw somebody who has a pretty bright future. And if he does get to campus, a guy who could really tear it up for Oregon State out West.
Yeah, I mean, you took the words right out of my mouth there. In the most endearing way, he looks like an NFL free safety. I mean, we were on him and that Canes team for most of the week, and, you know, right up against the fence at times, you know, videoing him, and like, it's the body and physicality is real. I mean, you want to talk about a guy that looks the part, that's kind of, you know, what you think about. But I'm with you. I think that the defensive skill set starting there, it just fits better in a corner. Like, he moves well, but I just think the actions and the routes and, you know, kind of the just overall defensive skill set profiles better professionally in right field than in center. And then at the plate, I know he had hit all summer. He was doing it for everyone all summer. I think that just over the course of those 4 to 5 days, whatever it was, I thought his timing was just a tick off. And it happens. Like, it's such a small sample of however many at bats he got between like 14 and 18. Like, that is a crumb of the cookie. So his timing was off. He had the equivalent. It was probably just a bad series, but you know, the natural strength and the ability to impact the baseball is there. I mean, we saw him catch a fastball, you know, pretty late, and he was late on a heater, but he still drove it out to, you know, the warning track in right field, got around the baseball a little bit, which led to a few rollovers, kind of got a heavy dosage of spin, which led to some issues. But you know, he's a physical freak, and the tools there are undeniable. And like, the summer circuit was so impressive. And like I said, he's been doing it for a lot of people. So it's, you can't just let one, you know, meh look discount all that he's done. So, I mean, I think just the tools with him and, you know, all that he's done and flashed, I think that's going to lead him to go in a pretty prominent spot in July. I mean, top two round guy for me coming out of this week.
We have had an opinion of this next player who's also an outfielder and probably somebody who's a little bit more, you know, built to stick in center field. We've thought very highly of him throughout the entirety of the summer, but I think Trevor Condon did some things this weekend that maybe vaulted him into another echelon. I mean, he was really impressive for a Tigers team that was, as a whole, very good, but a plus runner, a plus defender. The hitterish look was very apparent. He does a great job of getting the barrel to the baseball. He pretty much didn't have a down moment. I mean, you and I got multiple looks at him. We went and saw several of his games intentionally. I think that if we had to put a ranking on the guys we were most impressed by throughout the course of the week, Trevor Condon has to be at or near the top.
Yeah, he was outstanding. I mean, like you said, we had come into the week ready to kind of bear down on a number of guys, Trevor Condon being one, in the USA Prime Tiger Scout team being one of the teams. They were one of the most impressive teams I saw down there, but he was outstanding. Like, I think, you know, he draws comparisons to someone like Slater DeBron. It obviously helps that, you know, last year Slater played for the same team, but definitely like just classic top of the order spark plug kind of guy, loves to play, plays with his hair on fire. I think that the guys that, you know, it's evident they love to play, and RJ Cope is actually one of them as well. I mean, we saw it all weekend with RJ, like, high energy guy, you know, bringing the juice to the dugout. Like, that's really valuable and goes a long way. But anyways, Trevor also fits into that bucket. Prototypical leadoff guy, like, always involved. It was a really accurate barrel, I thought, all weekend. It'd be nice if he could kind of, you know, lift the baseball a little bit more. It was a heavy dose of ground balls. If they could just turn into, you know, line drives, I think that would be the one area in which I'd be curious to see him progress. But he can go and get it in the outfield. He's turning in 70, sometimes 80 grade run times on jailbreaks out of the box. I mean, he gets out of the box really, really quick. And it's just an advanced baseball sense. He kind of plays bigger than you know, perhaps his frame suggests, but, you know, it's bat speed, it's hitability, there's comfortability in the box there. He picks up spin well out of the hand. You know, he did a good job of controlling the strike zone. And, you know, I think that the intangibles set him apart, like the baseball sense, the kind of baseball rat type of qualities. And then, you know, with comparing him to Slater, like I think Slater was more of that like compact physical barrel chested look, with maybe a little bit more impact in there than Trevor, but that's not really a knock on Trevor and more of just an endorsement of Slater, who is just an outstanding player. But I think with Trevor, like in the outfield, like the speed and athleticism both translate really well to center field. I would be curious, again, not to keep on comparing him to Slater to Brun, but it's relatively easy. Like Slater's off the bat reads and routes were so crisp. And like with Trevor, a couple got on the more, you know, lengthy slash scenic side, not to a, like a whoa degree, but I think that that, you know, compared to Slater, he might be a tick below defensively, but I left the weekend with him comfortably in the second to third round bucket for me, and definitely closer to the, in that true second round range than the third. Like he was one of my favorite position players that I saw.
I want to talk about two pitchers before we wrap up this section of our show. And granted, I will also say, head on over to our podcast channels, wherever you listen to our podcast, check out the Draft Podcast with Carlos and Peter next week. Those guys, I'm sure, are going to recap a lot of this as well. Maybe more players than you and I will, because after all, this is the college podcast. One guy who I want to talk about, who is another college commit, lefty Sean Duncan, was really impressive on the hill in his outing. It was low to mid 90s, 92 to 94. I believe there were a couple instances where he touched 95. High three quarters release, very projectable. And that was the big thing for me. Undersized guy, high waisted, looks like somebody who I think will grab more velocity as time goes on. He had two slider shapes that we liked. There was a slurvier pitch that was pretty good, and then one that had some more sweep. Both were very solid offerings. He was around the zone for the first two innings. Third inning got a little bit haywire, but overall, this was a really good outing for somebody who is going into a program that does a very good job developing pitchers, especially this projectable left-handed type.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about, you know, guys fitting into buckets and how many buckets can you put guys into a lot, whether it's on the college podcast or the draft podcast. That's a phrase we use a lot. And Duncan fits into a lot of really positive buckets. Like it's now stuff. Fastball sat in the low 90s, but was up to 94, and a couple guns had a 95 with life through the zone. Plays really well in the top half, just thanks to its carry. But, you know, he's got the slider. It's got no doubt plus potential. And then, you know, he kind of tried to flip in a couple of curveballs in the low 80s and try to turn over a changeup or two that he just got way on the side of. But, you know, the fastball and slider are great building blocks. You know, I think which led to the command issues and the more laboring in the third inning. Like his front side would kind of fly open at times. He would miss up and or out. And the command became a little bit more scattered, but he stayed off the barrel. You know, it's present stuff right now. He's a projectable left-hander who has a starter look. I just expect the entire arsenal to tick up, both in terms of, you know, the velocity, but also in terms of how dynamic it is and how sharp it is, just as he continues to mature physically. Like he's 6'3", 180. You can tell just by, you know, you watch him live and you see him in person, like he's this kind of lean, high-waisted kid that you can pretty easily envision adding on some strength and physicality to. So, I mean, you know, Vanderbilt, they do an outstanding job of recruiting, especially Coach Blankmeyer, who's just the man. But he's fishing in all the right ponds. So I'm not surprised that he was able to land Duncan. We'll see if he's able to get down in Nashville. But, you know, he was someone that, when I had left his start, and we were talking about it as well, but, you know, he fits in the third to fifth round range for me this July. So we'll see how that shakes out, but another really quality arm.
All right. last guy here, and this is a little bit different because the last couple that we've talked about are committed, the last four. Soren Etheridge, a right-handed pitcher in the 2027 class out of Phoenix, Arizona. I would say, Pete, that this falls in the bucket of one of the more impressive underclassmen that we had the pleasure of watching during our time with Jupiter. He plays for that great Canes team that Blake Bowen is a part of. This was a standout outing. He threw 3 1/3 innings, one hit, didn't allow a run, struck out 8. And he had 16 total whiffs, 13 on a fastball that had ample run and ride, looked explosive, especially at the top of the zone. He generated four whiffs in the first inning, 5 in the second on his heater alone. It sat 92 to 94 miles per hour, an athletic, powerful delivery. I found out, you know, via some conversations that I had out there, that he is also a competitive swimmer, which is something that we like to hear early on in this draft process. That means he's an awesome athlete, which was apparent. Medium, large frame, lean, muscular kind of guy. And he took a pretty direct path to the plate. The stuff looked good. This was an impressive outing, and it brings me to, you know, another question that we'll talk about in a second, which is how much stock do you put in these showcases with these young guys? But first, what did you think of Soren and just, you know, some of the projectability that we saw with him as well?
Yeah, that was exciting. He got the ball in one of the later games. It was the Canes National against the Puerto Rico scout team, which was a great game, by the way. The Puerto Rico scout team, those kids competed their tails off, and they had one kid whose name escapes me right now, their starting catcher, who was nails behind the plate. But they're a fun team to watch. But anyways, with Soren, he kind of woke everyone up a little bit. I mean, as you said, it was pretty dynamic stuff, especially in the first inning. It fell off a little in the second and the third, and but you know, the clay and the building blocks are there with him. Like, you know, he's got arm speed, the fastball is up to a 4. It kind of jumps out of his hand, and it plays really, really well in the top half of the zone. He did a good job of commanding it there, especially in the first and second innings of his outing. Like, he was, you know, it was, I think he could have signaled it was coming and they would still swing under it and be late on it, they being opposing hitters. But athletic looking kid, it's unique. You obviously reference the athleticism, one with how a kid moves, and then you know, you can see if, you know, whether or not they play other sports, but the typical other sports are, you know, football or hoops, but it's kind of unique and more fun when you get, you know, like with Soren, how he's a competitive swimmer. Finn McElroy, coming out of high school, was a good water polo player, another Cali righty. Jacob Lombard, obviously one of the more prominent prep prospects in this year's class, is an outstanding soccer player. But yeah, I mean, the athleticism is apparent just with how he moves and just watching the mechanics. I didn't love the delivery a whole lot, but you know, there's a solid foundation there with the heater, and then, you know, he was signaling 2 breaking balls. The curveball looked ahead of the slider for me, and you know, whether it was on accident or not, there were a couple of sliders that actually looked pretty good and distinct in shape, kind of less slurvy and more long and kind of more of a 2-plane look. But yeah, it's a fun kind of, you know, blend right now of, you know, athleticism and stuff and upside. Like, he's checking a lot of boxes, and there's still untapped upside there just as you iron out some of the delivery stuff and you dial in on the pitch shapes. Like, he's uncommitted right now, but who knows for how long that'll be, because he already had some buzz coming into Jupiter week. Like, he was pretty prominently ranked on some 27 lists, but I think with a lot of heat in the house, I think that he'll find his college home, I think, sooner rather than later.
How much are we able to take away from these showcases? Because listen, it was a great weekend, and you and I, like we've been talking about, really enjoyed our look at a lot of these young guys, especially some of the underclassmen, because it gives you an opportunity to kind of get in early and understand what they're at, you know, with a very raw sense, and see them improve over time, which is valuable from an evaluation standpoint. But at the end of the day, for a hitter, we're talking about 15 to 20 at bats, depending on how your weekend goes. For a pitcher, you're talking about one to, you know, maybe three or four innings. A couple of the guys we saw out there had extended outings, but that was very much the exception, not the rule. It's hard to me, in my mind, to walk away from this weekend and saying, I know what this guy is, or this is, you know, some definitive trait that this guy has or definitive problem that he has, because the sample size is super small. What, in your mind, is the best way for an evaluator to use a weekend like that? Like, if you're a college fan and you're listening to this podcast, I guess the question would be, is a scout watching a weekend like what we saw in Jupiter and saying, all right, my team is going to take that guy and a college shouldn't expect to get him because we're preparing to, you know, present a nice package when it comes to draft time? Or is this kind of a drop in the bucket as far as building out a profile goes and getting to a point where a team might have somebody on their draft board?
It's a good question, because I think one way or another, like, you can't, you know, if you got a bad look at a guy over the course of the last 5 days, he didn't throw the ball well, or he didn't swing the bat well, like, you can't base your entire opinion and perception of a player based on just kind of an isolated look in the grand scheme of things, because, like you said, these pitchers are, they're throwing once, the hitters are getting basically a series worth, like a series plus worth of at bats. So I think that, you know, you can help yourself out. I mean, there were a lot of guys that helped themselves out this weekend. Trevor Condon's one of them. Connor Como's another one of them, on the hitter side, or at the very least, like, reinforce where they're currently viewed. And then on a similar, or not similar breath, but kind of on the other end of the spectrum, you can hurt yourself a little bit. And I mean, I like to think we're a positive show, so I'm not going to drop any names of any kids who may have struggled a little bit, because it's a high pressure, high stakes environment, which is also something to account for when evaluating these kids. It's like, how do they do when the lights are bright? You know, when the pressure's on a little bit, do they kind of rise up to the occasion, or do they turtle up a little bit? So, I mean, on the flip side of that, there were some kids who really struggled. And I think, you know, if you came into the week saying, hey, I feel pretty good about, you know, this kid, and, you know, he might fit in that, in the day one range for me, I don't think it's all that unreasonable to come out of Jupiter where he's facing, you know, pretty high caliber arms, and it's a high stakes environment. And if he doesn't perform, and, you know, it's more so like the how he does it, like, not to go on this long winded tangent, like, you go 0-for-11 and barrel the ball six times and put together quality at bats, like, you could do everything really well and you'd have nothing to show for it. But if the how the guy does it, and it doesn't really look good, if, you know, he's kind of going over, or, you know, there are a lot of punch outs in there, and if the process is poor and the how he does it is poor, I think that it can absolutely affect you in the other way. Like, you're not going to just tank a guy based on that, but, you know, it's, you know, hey, maybe he's more a, you know, a third to fifth round type of guy, third to fourth round type of guy, as opposed to this slam dunk top two round player. It depends guy to guy and player to player, but I think that that's kind of the best way to look at it.
I'll give you an example of somebody who I thought, you know, this applies to. Bryant James is a shortstop committed to Virginia, super twitchy athletic guy, runs well. I would say that he's, you know, fringe double plus runner, can play shortstop. Maybe we'll have a chance to stick there. The arm is solid. We saw him look really good physically, but the results were just okay. He was 4-for-17 throughout the weekend, but he hit the ball hard a couple of times. I think that you could say, just watching some of the at-bats, even the ones that didn't end in hits or getting on base, that this was somebody who looked like, you know, a player who would have a chance in the draft. I would come away from that weekend, and this will be reflected in something that I write this week, I came away from that weekend with a very positive sentiment on Bryant James, and it was not a good, you know, good quote unquote weekend from a box score standpoint. So it is interesting to me that there is this range of the results can be bad, but the process can be good, and that can be a positive weekend for you. The results can be good, but the process is bad, and it can go the other way. But again, and I think this is the most important part to really hammer home here, it is not the end all be all. Like, you're not making a determination from Jupiter and going, this is what it is with any one player, even if it's a 2026 guy who's 18 years old and, you know, months away from the draft. This is not going to be the showcase that makes or breaks you. So everything that we are saying, and I'm sure this is the same for the professionals in the house, the evaluators, take it with a grain of salt to a degree. We're going to have to see over the course of the remainder of this offseason and then obviously the spring how these guys continue to perform as we continue to project them out and adjust our rankings, which I will give you a heads up next week, I believe on Wednesday at baseballamerica.com. We will have an updated version of the 2026 draft rankings as we build towards the Baseball America 500, which everybody looks forward to come draft time. Peter, that was their talk about the future. Let's talk about the now. Some fall ball dope before we get out of here for this week's episode of the Baseball America College podcast. I did a story over at the Baseball America site doing some insights from around the country on fall baseball. That will be a weekly thing, by the way, over at BA. We're going to have breakdowns of college stuff throughout the remainder of the fall. I'll be at a couple of scrimmages. I'm actually doing this podcast from Gainesville. I'm at Condren Family Ballpark, getting ready to watch our top pitcher in the class, Liam Peterson, throw his first fall outing against hitters. Just an inning. But I want to talk about a couple of the things that were in that story with you on the pod. The first of which is Vanderbilt baseball. Obviously, last year was outstanding. They were the number one seeded team in the NCAA tournament. You and I talked positively about them all year. JD Thompson, Cody Bowker, two of the better starting pitchers in the country, gave them a great 1-2 punch. An unceremonious exit from the tournament, however, they lost in their own home regional, didn't advance to a super. This year, there are high hopes for this Vandy team. They reloaded with the portal a little bit. They brought back some key guys on the mound. The question is, will they be able to translate that into a deeper postseason run early? I'd say they have a good chance, but right now it's kind of hard to tell. They're very banged up this fall. A lot of guys who are injured. What are some of the things, Peter, whether this is about Vanderbilt or more broadly speaking, that you're looking for from a team in the fall that is hurt? Can we take a lot away from the depth of your guys, the freshmen who are going to get some reps that maybe otherwise wouldn't have had that opportunity if everybody were healthy? How do you maximize these opportunities if you're a college and as an evaluator as well? Getting the right people in the door quick is critical to maintain your company's workflow. When it comes to hiring, Indeed is all you need. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. Indeed Sponsored Jobs helps you stand out and hire fast. With Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, Sponsored Jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring so fast because it puts the best and most qualified candidates in front of you quickly. Plus, with Indeed Sponsored Jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. How fast is Indeed? In the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/baseballamerica. Just go to Indeed.com/baseballamerica right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/baseballamerica. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, when isolating on a team that's banged up, not even necessarily just Vanderbilt in and of itself, but any team that's injured and you kind of have to have guys thrust into these bigger roles perhaps sooner than expected, I think that it's beneficial for all in the long run. I mean, you can see what you get. I mean, you can see what you have in some of these freshmen. And I think that there's no substitute or replacement for experience. I mean, I think, you know, even though it's against their teammates and classmates and roommates in some cases, like getting at bats and seeing live pitching against quality arms is so huge. And standing in the box and just getting those reps. And then on the flip side, on the mound, like throwing against high caliber hitters and, you know, learning how to attack guys, what works, what doesn't work, maybe in your arsenal. Just like little things. I mean, so I think with Vanderbilt, for a team that's kind of going through it injury wise in the fall, like you can't really take away a whole lot. I mean, you've got guys that you can be really excited about. Birdie Johnston is obviously one of them. I think Riker Waite after his summer on the Cape is another one that is in for a breakout sophomore campaign. Braden Holcomb in year three. So they've got a lot of pieces, but I think that the weird kind of underlying value there is, you know, you can get you can get freshmen and these underclass guys and newcomers experience that they may have otherwise not had. But I think that that's also part of the fall is like, you want to get these guys experience in at bats no matter what. So you can maybe learn to a little bit greater of an extent what you might have on a player to player basis. But I don't think that you can, you know, you got to see him go out and do it against actual competition, I think, before you can feel really convicted. But obviously you'd rather have him perform in these fall more controllable settings than not. So
what is the value, and we've talked about this on a previous episode, of getting that fall work in? I've had countless conversations at this point this offseason with coaches who feel as though the fall might need some sort of adjustment in terms of what the focus is, whether that's leaning more into strength and conditioning in the fall and maybe lightening the load from a baseball activity standpoint. I've had some coaches tell me that the reps that you're getting that are live and game-like are invaluable for some of these players, especially the younger guys. And that's really important. And it's also important on the team building side. And, you know, a lot of coaches have said that you can't discount that, especially at the college level. But there are also guys who are going into their junior draft seasons, like Cameron Flukey, and that's my transition into this portion. Cameron Flukey is not going to throw much, if at all, this fall. He threw 101 innings last year, very heavy workload. He's a draft-eligible player. He's in contention for our number one pitcher. You know, he's way up there already, I think number two behind Liam Peterson. Is it a detriment in your mind for a guy to not throw? Is it a case-by-case thing, which is where I would align on this? I think for a guy like Flukey coming off of a career high where you eclipsed 100 innings at the college level, I have no problem. If anything, I'd encourage that kind of player to be sitting out in the fall and maybe getting some rest and working on the arm and trying to figure out, you know, how to maximize this junior season without adding, you know, extra mileage on the tires, if you will. I think that it's a good thing that we won't really see a whole lot of Cameron Flukey this fall. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I hate to simplify it and down to this level, but like, there's no reason for him to throw like this fall. There's no upside to it at all. So I think it's a good period for him to get some rest and, you know, work on some things and, you know, get after it in bullpens and all that. But there's really no reason or upside for him to be throwing a whole lot this fall. And there are a number of pitchers who also fall into that category as well. So for guys like that, those high mileage, you know, highly touted kind of key pieces who have, you know, either just last spring, like with Cam, with it being over 100 innings, or, you know, you've got a rising sophomore who between his freshman spring and summer on the Cape, Northwoods, NECBL, wherever it is, accumulated a lot of innings and just kind of needs the fall to recuperate and work on his body a little bit, maybe get stronger. Like that makes total sense. And I think is way more productive than pushing it and pushing it unnecessarily and trying to throw and rack up all these innings. So, I mean, obviously you want to build a guy up and build up durability and all of that. But I think that it's a kind of a fine line to toe with, you know, you also want to, you know, have him work on his body and get stronger. So no, with just focusing on Cameron Flukey, I'd actually be surprised if he was throwing this fall for what it's worth.
We have had, you know, sources tell us that is not something that's going to happen. It's going to be a very light fall for him in terms of getting into the mound in game-like scenarios. It doesn't mean that the development stops, but probably just looks a little bit different. Also worth mentioning, I said that I was going to break this down at the top of the show, Coastal Carolina's fall practices have not started yet. They're expected to this week, the week of October 13th. Today's the 14th. They renovated their playing surface up in Conway at their stadiums. They had a little bit of a delayed fall, and that's another reason why Flukey's fall maybe is looking a little bit different than maybe some Coastal fans expected. However, and that this is it's the perfect segue here, Pete. Some guys don't throw in the fall because they had a lot of innings on them. They don't necessarily need the work. We know what Cam Flukey is going to be. There are other players of similar profiles. I'm talking about Liam Peterson, who do need the work and do need to be able to throw in the fall. I am at his, you know, first fall outing of the fall, October 14th. He's going to throw an inning, like I said a couple minutes ago. I think it's important for him. We found out today that he added a two-seam fastball to his repertoire. He's been working on his release point. He added some strength to his frame, especially in the lower half. He said that he did that to try and throw some better strikes, harness his delivery a little bit more and throw, you know, with more control. Is it important for a guy like that to get out there and to be able to get some feel and game reps before the calendar turns over to the new year? He's thrown a lot. He's had some injuries in the past, but my inclination would be, yeah, it's important for him to get out there and continue to get some work as he looks to lock down that SP1 spot among college players.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if his body's feeling good and he, again, if he's just feeling good about where he's at and the coaching staff feels great about where the body's at and just where the arsenal is, like, there's definitely, get out and kind of, the leash will be short and it'll be way more kind of tame, obviously. But yeah, an inning or two or, kind of scattering some appearances across the fall, definitely, especially when you've kind of, like you alluded to, where you've tweaked some things in the operation and changed your slot and maybe added a pitch to the repertoire. You want to see how the shapes play from that slot against hitters in a live scenario, what the command's like, and you can iron out some things, and I think that can be really productive for all involved. So it's funny, we kind of talk about, someone like Cam Flukie, who, it's more productive for, him and just where he's at, to rest and, kind of take care of his body and recuperate over the fall. And then also with Liam Peterson, it's beneficial for him to log these handful of appearances across the next month or two for reasons that we also cited. And there are benefits and there are benefits to both, and both each approach is valid. So I'm happy you touched on that as well.
And there's kind of a third bucket that we can put players and teams into, which is that there is a makeup and kind of intangible aspect to having a full fall where everybody is a part of it. That is the case at a school like Kansas, which brings in a whole lot of players, over the offseason, be it from JUCO or Division II or NAIA, and Kansas is kind of unique in how they do it. But the result is that they have a lot of new faces every year. There's a lot of roster churn in Lawrence, and it's been to their benefit. You and I think that they're one of the sneakier Big 12 contenders this year. We've heard from several sources that that's a team that's looking really hot in the fall. They have some newcomers that have performed well on both sides of the ball. It's important, and I'm going to have you chime in on this as well, for a team like that, that has so many new faces in the building, and you can debate us all you want on how truly team activity baseball is with just how compartmentalized every facet of the game is. But for me, at least, it is valuable for a Kansas where you do have so many new parts to get out there on the field and to do it all together and to kind of get some of these early low pressure looks as a team without some of your stars sitting out. And that has nothing to do with individual development or where people are at miles on the body or, worrying about taxing them too early or too late. This is a team that just simply needs reps together, period. And the fall has value in that aspect too.
Yeah. Regardless of where you're at and how many newcomers you're bringing in, I think that there's always value to just, rolling the balls out and getting after it. Like, I mean, I think to more of an extent with some teams like, Kansas, Georgia, any school that has this plethora of newcomers, you got to figure out where the pieces of the puzzle all fit. And I mean, that's something that you'll figure out over the fall and, ideally not, but perhaps even across the first few weeks of the season, just seeing what works and what doesn't. I mean, you got to figure out which guy fits in each role best, where they might benefit the most from. So I think just that grand theme, like I think going out and having that mentality of iron sharpening iron and competing against each other for roles in the rotation and spots in the starting nine, I think that's highly beneficial and creates a competitive environment. And I think that's a very, very productive for all involved.
Well, Pete, that is going to do it for this week's episode of the Baseball America College Baseball Podcast. If you want more of our college baseball content, like I always say, head on over to baseballamerica.com/college. We're pumping stuff out there all the time. This week, it's going to be a lot more on that Jupiter action that we caught. 35 players, like I said, are going to have write-ups on the site between Peter and I by the end of the week. We have more fall ball content coming. We have that feature on Stryker Pence. The amateur side is loaded, Peter. It doesn't matter that it's mid-October here. We're still churning it all out. And head on over to YouTube, too, to check out our video content. Baseball America's YouTube channel is constantly busy these days as well. But again, thank you so much for listening to our show here. We're going to see you in 2 weeks, still in off-season mode. So in 2 Tuesdays from now, we will return to you. But for this episode, for Peter Flaherty, I'm Jacob Rudner, and we'll see you next time.